Willie Nelson, Waylon Jennings, Kris Kristofferson. You know, before they were legends of outlaw country, they were lost souls looking for their sound. Don't miss Mandy Moore and the new scripted Audible original, The Boar's Nest, Sue Brewer and the Birth of Outlaw Country Music. Discover the true untold story of the extraordinary woman behind the rise of outlaw country music and its biggest stars. Hear how one woman's vision in her tiny living room, far from Nashville's Music Row, became the epicenter of a musical movement. Mandy Moore as Sue Brewer in The Boar's Nest. Listen now at audible.com/The Boar's Nest. This is the year to stop overpaying for your family plan. So choose a Straight Talk wireless family plan. Unlimited data, talk, and text on a reliable 5G network. And you can get a new line starting at $25 per line per month for 4 lines, plus taxes and fees and no contracts. That's good decision making. Available at Walmart and on straighttalk.com. Family plan discount with 4 lines, all on the Silver Unlimited plan. Not combinable with auto pay discount. In times of traffic, your data may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Video streams at up to 480p. Hey, it's Bobby Bones. Hey, I just want to say thanks to everybody who has stepped up for the St. Jude kids. St. Jude's doing incredible work fighting childhood cancer. And because of donations like the ones that you give, families never receive a bill ever from St. Jude for treatment, travel, housing, food, none of that. Help St. Jude stop childhood cancer. Become a partner in hope. Get this awesome new This Shirt Saves Lives shirt. It's going to look great on you. So join all the doctors, researchers, and me in this fight. All right, text the word Bobby. It's only 6 numbers to 785-833. Again, text the word Bobby to just these 6 numbers, 785-833. Hey guys, it's Bobby here. Thank you for listening and subscribing to the Bobbycast. You know, because of Dan and Shay's record, Good Things, that's out, I thought we'd play the origin story of the group. And we did Dan yesterday. Up next is Shay and how he originally started as a solo artist. And then he met Dan at a house party. He talks about his first deal with T-Pain's record label and how they got Justin Bieber on 10,000 Hours. One of our favorite episodes from a couple years ago. Here is Shay Mooney and the origin story of Dan and Shay here on the Bobbycast. All right, welcome to episode 221. Shay from Dan and Shay, which we had your partner in. It's probably been a year or so ago.
Yeah, man.
And even for him, it was kind of weird coming in alone.
Yeah.
But my whole goal with these is to actually let people hear individuals.
Yeah, this is probably trouble for me. They won't like our band after this.
I don't think that's the case. I think people are going to like the band more after this.
I hope so.
Do you find, and again, here's the weird thing for me interviewing somebody that I kind of know.
Yeah.
Is that there are things that I know that I would never ask, and there are things that I've always wanted to ask in a personal space. You're just with a buddy and you just don't ask questions. You know, like,
for sure.
Tell me about being 7. You know, that just never comes up when we're somewhere, you know?
Yeah.
So that's why I'm excited to have you over. And also, I got to prank you outside of my house.
You did. I got here. I was a little bit scared, I'm not going to lie, because I didn't know what your house looked like. And when did you move? Did you move?
Year and a half or so.
Like a year and a half ago?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I knew that. But I was just going to ask. Okay. But I didn't know what your house looked like. So I pulled up. And I was like, I was going to text you, but I was like, I don't want to be outside of like someone random's house. And I didn't want to like not park. So I get out and I ring the doorbell. And what I thought was an old woman answered.
Hello, who's out there?
Hello.
That's what I did. Hello.
Scared me. I was like, I'm scaring this woman because it had a camera and she's out there being like, oh, they're finally here.
And I saw your face and I was like, oh, he's thinking this is real.
Yeah. I was a little scared.
I was like, who is it? And you went, Shay. Oh, Shay who? Shay Mooney? I don't have any money. Oh, and about that time, Mike D opened the door.
I was scared that I was going to open up to, like, you know, someone prepared. Because this house is very much of like a fortress.
It's
I was like, this is someone
safe.
That's, you know, loaded.
And stop it.
I meant loaded as in like now, they got a gun.
Do you want to get, speaking of loaded, this puts me on a good question.
Okay.
I Googled, because I always think it's fun to Google how much people are worth. And it says that you're worth $500,000. Now, I'm not going to ask you how much you're worth because I would never do that. I would never do that. However, it's got to be more than that at this point.
It's a lot more.
Like a little bit. I was offended for you. I was like, the guy's written. Their shows are everything about you guys.
See, I've set up the way my bank accounts are set up. I got a checkings and savings.
Yeah, yeah.
It makes it hard to track.
But over, right?
We're getting right into it.
I wasn't going to, but you came up and you're like, your house is a fortress. You're so loaded.
I meant loaded as in like, okay, you know.
Then I'll punt from that question.
Well, look, maybe it might be over that, but I got a kid and getting ready for a second. So I'm, you know.
And I'll also say this about you. You didn't grow up loaded.
No.
So it's not like this, your, whatever you have, $50 or what I've heard is $500 million. Whatever it is.
Well, I don't want to say anything, but it's close to that. It's close to that. If that's going to be the rumor, I'll go up to 500.
That you've earned it is my point.
Yeah.
That you have.
Likewise, which is, you know.
Whenever I think about you guys, and I see you now, and you guys are, you know, I was nervous, and I'll come back to this in a second. I wasn't nervous for you when you announced an arena tour before it goes on sale because it was your first time to do an arena tour.
Yeah.
And just as someone who has to put up theaters and I'm nervous before they go on sale to go, is anybody going to show up? Because I'm doing bigger theaters this time.
Yeah.
So I was like, wow, they're putting up arenas. I sure hope it sells like crazy. And as I'm thinking that, I also go, man, I remember when those two dudes were just two dudes doing karaoke with Nada. They had their first song.
Yeah.
I was hassling them on the radio and you were struggling.
Yeah, man.
And that's, we're so cool to see, and even myself to feel for you going, I'm so nervous for them as you're about to do sell out arenas.
Like, dude, it's crazy, man.
It's
that's
so crazy,
honestly,
to
that's
see the growth.
I think that's, you know, people ask, you know, do you get nervous for anything anymore? And honestly, I don't get nervous performing, you know, playing shows, as I'm sure you don't really get necessarily nervous. It's more of an exciting, you know, your heart kind of starts to race a little bit. You're excited about it, but that's probably the most nervous that you get as an artist is putting on a tour because you just never know. Selling tickets is different than getting hit songs. It really is. I mean, it's kind of that we've been trying to build this grassroots thing for a while. We've been headlining for a long time of doing small shows. And then, you know, our last tour did well. But even before that tour, I was nervous because it's like you just don't know.
Tuesday and Wednesday night shows. Like,
yeah,
you guys were the guys that were grinding doing weeknight shows.
Yeah.
Shows, and everyone else is doing what the normal Nashville thing is, do Friday, Saturday, some Thursday. But you guys were grassrooting it. Early. Which again, I admire so much. I just admire hustle and grit with talent. And so whenever you put an arena, and I saw you guys announced it, the arena tour comes out, and I'm like, man, first of all, I was proud because you guys have graduated to that level.
Yeah.
But then I'm going, please God, I hope it sells like crazy, because I know just in my little world of doing comedy, when I'm putting up a bigger theater, I'm like, oh, people like me. I hope they like me more than they used to.
Yeah. As much as you were nervous, like, just imagine, I was about 30 times as nervous as I can imagine that you were for us. Because it's like, man, even like the biggest room we did on the last tour was about, I think, like 8,200 tickets, you know, and that's like, we've done like a couple dates where, you know, we've got up there a little bit in the last couple years, but that's like jumping from even 8 to like 18 is just, that's a lot.
And
you know?
A lot of those 18 rooms.
Yeah. Yeah. I was just hoping for one. I was like, just God, please let us sell out just one. Because that's like, I mean, we were starting in Nashville too. And I remember where I was. I was back home in Arkansas, and I can't remember why I was in, but I was visiting my family, and I remember we're about to put on the tour for sale, and it was in the pre-sale, and I was just like, when you're starting in Nashville, that's like starting in your hometown. I mean, that's, you know, that's where we all live now. That's where all of our friends are. So like, when you start there, and if you don't sell that out, it's like, well, it's gonna be a long tour. It's gonna be a long tour.
And another wrinkle on the Nashville show is that a home show, there's just a lot of things you have to do that's not a part of a normal show if you were in Milwaukee. Because a home show, you have to entertain so many people that you're close to. And it's the first show where you have all this production you're just learning.
Yeah.
And now you have all these extra people there.
Yeah.
And you're doing freaking Bridgestone Arena.
Yeah. It's like, let's do this in our hometown when we've never done this show ever. And it's going to be too, luckily it was like, that was the first call that we got. I was so nervous that the tour wasn't going to sell. I mean, we had hoped, you know, that it would do well, but we got the call and they're like, all right, we have to add it. I knew whenever I got the call, they were like, all right, you know, the Nashville show. And I was like, this is about to be either the worst day of my life or like one of the most exciting days. And they said we were going to have to add another show because we sold the tickets.
Crazy.
And I was like,
isn't that so crazy?
Crazy, man. Honestly, like my heart was just
arena.
Like, couldn't believe it. And that was kind of, people ask like, what are those moments where, you know, you feel kind of like, man, this is like a dream come true. I mean, that to me was, you know, playing venues was really more like the Ryman. That was kind of my, when you look at the biggest bands, like that I thought were the biggest bands in the world, like they were playing places like the Ryman. You know, that size of venue was like, they made it. They're like the biggest bands in the world. Bridgestone was never really even on my radar until I moved to town and I realized that was a place that people did shows. And I was like, that would be pretty amazing to do. But that was kind of the moment where I was like, okay, this is, that's probably one of the coolest things ever. I mean, your first, it was our first arena to sell out. That's
and
a
you had to add a second
deal.
One.
Yeah.
Now, you didn't just sell it well. You had to, it's like, I feel a proudness for you and Dan both because it's just, I've just seen, because we kind of came in at the same time.
Yeah.
I've seen you go from two guys that they patched together, that you guys patched together, but people are like, I don't know if they're country.
Yeah.
That was your whole rap. Like, I don't know if they're going to make it.
Yeah.
I don't know if that they're, you know, the guy can sing okay, but
yeah.
They just didn't know.
For sure. I mean, I saw one of the coolest, it was an Instagram message. I think this girl had sent this picture to us and she was like, I think she had tagged us and it said, I saw these guys, and it was in 2012, I think, or 2013, like right after we had met and we were doing this round at Soulshine Pizza that I don't think is there anymore. I think it's something else now in Midtown. And she was like, I saw these guys play around, you know, however long ago in 2013. And now I just bought a ticket to see them at Bridgestone. And it kind of took me back for a second because I was just like, man, this is just as they think it's cool. A lot of times you're so busy with building it that it's hard to look back. And I saw that picture and immediately in that moment, it was just like, whoa, that's heavy. You know, we were struggling in that moment. We were probably paying for, honestly, I think the deal, we weren't getting paid for the round. We got a slice of pizza. Like that was what we were getting paid
you
for.
You got pizza and experience.
Yeah, absolutely.
And playing to where people would actually be there to listen.
Yeah. Yeah, which they weren't that night. But we did get the pizza, which was pretty awesome. Apparently there was one girl, though, that was there and got to kind of see that, which was a pretty cool moment. I don't know.
I looked up the most Google questions about you. Here you go. Number one is, are you and Shay related? You can answer these. I'm not going to answer them for you.
Okay.
But are Dan and Shay related?
We're not. We're not related. Not that I know about.
Okay. Did you 23andMe and make sure?
I haven't yet.
You know, it's
starting to think about it now, though.
What is
this
cool
would make a lot of sense
for me is when I see you guys. I don't know what award show it was, but you guys still like each other.
Yeah.
To the point of it's not just I'll compare it to, and I'm not married. You're married now, but a marriage that's been through like 10 years, and this is not you guys, but they're together and they just do it because they've agreed to a partnership. It's like you guys that are that married couple that you look at and go, wow, they still like each other after all this time.
It is, man. It feels like that. And I think it's because it started out from a place of mutual respect. You know, it wasn't just this, it wasn't so much, a lot of times it's this whimsical thing that happens and, you know, you don't even have time to really get to know each other. You know, a lot of times in bands, it can happen quickly and you didn't have the time where you were kind of grinding it out with each other on the road and doing, you know, millions of shows together. And Dan and I had we had become kind of who we were going to be when we had met. We knew where we were trying to get to, and we just really respected what each other, you know, were doing. And it's kind of crazy because Dan and I are really complete opposites in most ways. And I think from that, you know, it's kind of like a puzzle piece. It's like he picks up what I can't do. He's an unbelievable producer. He makes me sound good. I can't do any of that. I don't know what I'm doing in the studio. So it's kind of that thing of I trust him, you know, with literally like my life and my well-being, and he trusts me with that as well. And I think it just kind of, you know, it's like being family, but it's really just I don't know. It's a really cool thing because I do still like, and we are still best friends. You know, it's kind of one of those things of all the time we're always looking at each other, being like, I can't believe that this is happening. It's just crazy.
The second one is, who are Shay's parents?
Who are Shay's parents? Rick and Cindy Mooney are their names. Natural Dam, Arkansas. I know everybody, probably a lot of people watching from Natural Dam. I think they just got internet, so this is probably going to be a pretty big deal.
You know, you laugh about Natural Dam, Arkansas, but my town, Mountain Pine, Arkansas, we just got a cell phone tower now,
really?
Like 19 months ago.
Wow. Now, where is that in as far as like where Little Rock is? Because we're on the, you know, the western side of Arkansas.
Right, so if you go straight down, because I know where you are.
Yeah.
If you go straight down,
yeah,
Mountain Pine is below Little Rock. On the same side of the state, about an hour.
Okay.
So left side of the state, straight down.
Is that toward El Dorado, or is that other?
It's the other side.
Other side.
Yeah. Okay. I went to Fayetteville, and I was went to the Razorback game this past week.
Yeah.
And I don't get many weekends where I'm off, and so I went over and I took Adam Hambrick, who's a dear friend of mine, and
I saw that. And you were with Ronnie Brewer, right?
Yeah.
Ronnie, yeah, I know Ronnie.
Well, they were asking about you.
Oh, yeah, that's cool.
They were like, "Have you seen Shay lately?"
Yeah.
And it's almost like if someone, they think we're all like related or hang out.
Yeah, yeah.
that we're all from
like,
Arkansas.
I don't know, he's in the kitchen. Let me go. Like,
where's Shay been? What's up with Shay? Yeah. And I'm like, you know, I haven't seen him in probably like a month.
Yeah.
But I think he's doing pretty good.
Yeah.
I watch him on Instagram. But it's just funny how when we all come from Arkansas, and afterward, I hung out with a lot of listeners and a lot of people that listen to the show or watch American Idol. And they were, I probably got asked about you four times.
That's
like,
hilarious.
You seen Shay lately? Just yeah, they think all us Arkansas boys run together.
We should probably have a meeting.
Yeah, we haven't had one in at least
yeah,
a couple
months. Yeah, it's been a couple months.
Yeah.
The chapter of Arkansas.
Here's one. Does Shay get paid more than Dan?
Yeah, that was in the deal. I was like, look.
If I'm going to sing.
If I'm going to do this, you know, you might do most of the work, but this is how it's going to be.
I assume there's a split. You guys are a part.
It's an even split. As far as I know. Maybe he does. I don't know.
One more. Does Dan or Shay sing Speechless?
Well, we both sing. Dan sings harmony. I sing the lead.
But you're the.
Yep.
You're the.
But I. Yeah. I'm that.
You're that.
That sounded pretty amazing. I'll be honest with you.
Yeah.
Do you want to join?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that'd be cool. Can you imagine if I went out and just we didn't say anything about it, just as a joke? We didn't acknowledge it.
Yeah.
We just walked out and we didn't say anything. I just walked out and it was like they're like Dan and Shay and it's me and we start Speechless. And
it would totally depend on if someone knew that it was you or not. Because if they didn't and they hadn't seen us before, they'd be like. I had no idea that it was three of them.
Then you don't come
out. I don't come out.
No, I put on like a black
That's
wig.
Even better.
And I never break character.
Yeah.
And I sing it
amazing.
As great as I can. And just, we keep cameras in the crowd to see if people are stunned. We never acknowledge it.
It's going to be a pretty great social experiment. That will happen.
And I can tell you, no one will get angry at that. Did you watch, Mike, what's the show called you watch? The Mandalorian?
Mandalorian.
I did.
Okay, you're a Star Wars guy, though.
I am, yeah.
So I've never seen Star Wars. I would like to, because I'm a nerd in a lot of ways. Did you like the show? And would someone like me who's never seen Star Wars like the show?
Yes. Yeah, I think so.
Do I need to know Star Wars?
Not at all. I think you can. I think the cool part about the show is that there is, you know, if you like, read the books or whatever. I wasn't that. I didn't like, I read like some Star Wars books like back in the day. But there's like the whole Mandalorian thing is kind of, you wouldn't really know about it even if you were a Star Wars fan. You'd probably just think like, oh, that's like Boba Fett, which I guess, you know, Jango and Boba Fett, they weren't even actually Mandalorian. They just liked their armor, I guess.
So I don't know what you're saying right now.
Yeah, and see, the quantum mechanics, we could go all into it. No, I don't really know that. But no, it really doesn't have anything to do with the story of Star Wars that people would know from their kids. It's just it's a really new concept, really. Even to a Star Wars fan.
How fast did you take in that show?
Probably because they did it in, I think they did it every Thursday. Like they released an episode a week.
Oh, they dropped it a week of time. Oh, I didn't know that. You couldn't binge it, huh?
And I think I started, I want to say there's eight episodes. And I think I started on six. Or I started when they had six out. So I watched all of them. And then I had to wait for like the next 2 weeks. So I watched it. I think I watched six episodes in like a couple of days.
Did you go watch the last Star Wars movie?
I did.
And your thoughts?
I liked it. It was a lot. They had to kind of button up the whole deal, which was a lot to kind of.
It seemed
throw
like the
there.
Fan reviews were great, but the critic reviews were really not good.
Well, it was kind of, you know, and I love Star Wars. I'm not the movie guy who's like, I don't usually look at the critics reviews. If like the fan views are pretty good, I will enjoy the movie. Like I like a lot. If I go to a movie, I usually have a pretty good time. Like, I enjoy the whole experience of going to watch movies. I've always loved movies as a kid. Still love them. But yeah, I enjoyed it as like a movie. It was very entertaining. But it wasn't like, if you were to pick it apart, there was like a lot of things that were just like, oh, that's, so he's just been alive this whole time. you know?
That's not a spoiler,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, that's not that's not
Chewbacca?
A,
that's the one I know.
No, not Chewbacca.
Is he in
like
it?
Senator Palpatine was like, he's like the, you know, he's the, you know, the Dark Lord Sith guy. He's like the main bad guy. And he dies in like, one of the first movies, whenever, like with Darth Vader. Darth Vader kills him, and then he's just like, "Well, I guess kind of for you, maybe."
But like for someone who hasn't seen the final movie,
not the final movie.
Got it. Okay.
This happens in like in the, you know, 70s or whatever. Whenever the first movies came out, he dies, and then he doesn't really, And then it's just kind of he's just alive again. Yeah.
Can you go to the movies without people stopping you?
Yeah. I mean, it kind of depends what theater, like where we are. If I go back home, like, and people would, you know, they kind of know that I'm home, then it can be a little bit of a like everybody knows that, you know, I'm there. But people are super sweet, you know.
Nashville, can you go to the movie theater without someone stopping you?
Yeah, like, I mean, like usually, like we'll get stopped a couple times, especially for some reason. If I'm like with Hannah, because people kind of follow her too, that's more of like an indicator. If Dan and I are together, then people really like. But if it's just like, if I'm just out somewhere, people aren't like, because people aren't really expecting to see anyone that they would know ever. So they're not like looking around, like analyzing, like, wait a second.
I went to True Food Kitchen today to have lunch, and I was having a work talk with somebody from my PR team where we're kind of lining up some stuff. And Sam Hunt walks in and comes in, just sitting over there and grabs his food, chill. Sam's a monster guy.
He's a huge guy.
Huge guy, big beard.
Yeah.
So like, wave at him, waves back, does his deal. He's there for like 10 minutes. Nobody says a word to him, walks out. And I'm like, that's interesting. Nobody. BK from Florida Georgia Line walks right in, walks up to a table. I say, what up to him? Hey, what up, dude? Get up. He sits down. Nobody.
Yeah.
He had a hat, you know, did boom. And it was just like seeing, and nobody kind of, it was just cool to see nobody mess with anybody.
For sure.
Especially here.
Yeah.
And then I saw Thomas Strutt's manager. And so there was just a lot happening.
Yeah.
And nobody, I went to dinner a couple weeks ago at Adele's.
Yeah.
So not a super fancy place.
Yeah,
but
cool spot. Though.
Cool spot, close to work. And Reese Witherspoon came in. And it's her and her family. They sit right in the middle. Nobody bothered them.
Yeah.
I just think it's cool here.
I would have bothered her probably.
Well, before my rule
did
would
you
be.
Did you bother
I
her?
It, but my rule is you shouldn't bother someone if they're with their kids or they're eating.
Yeah.
If they have food in front of them.
Yeah.
If they're not, they know they're famous.
Yeah.
That's on them. They wanted to get famous. You should go say hi if you want to say hi. Never be ashamed to be a fan of somebody.
Yeah.
But if there's food or a kid involved.
That's a great rule. Chill. I think it should be like a written rule. If you're eating or if you're with your kids, and even like, it doesn't like bother me insanely if someone comes, like, cause we'll go out to eat at like, there's a Mexican restaurant that's by my house. It's like our favorite spot. We always go there. And usually if I'm with them, like there, people will wait till like we're done eating. And it's really funny to watch people,
just
which is like,
and
I can't like, do you find yourself like very hyper aware of people? I can hardly like really, when we go out, and I'm in a place where I just know there's something in like the room that shifts if someone does recognize you. If we're going out with like a nicer restaurant and we're like, I have my hair all spiked. I usually just like wear a hat. But if I have like my hair spiked up, it's like a better chance that someone might be like, that guy's hair looks weird. So he might be in Nashville. So it's kind of funny. I'll be watching like around the room and I can always tell when someone's like kind of just looking over like, I think that might be.
What kind of got me was people would take pictures. And I wouldn't know. I wasn't aware for a while. I'm just like, who cares about me?
And you'd see them later.
But then people would post pictures and then tag me of me like just looking awkward or.
That's the worst.
And I would be like, I would love to take a picture. Say hi.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't look, mostly for my sake, so I don't look stupid on your Instagram. Yeah. Like, come say hi to me. I would love to take a picture with you.
Because I love being out when people come up and they say something. Like, I love that. People are like you said, this is something that we got into. It's not like I'm just like hungry for the attention, but like it's, I want them to like. If they're there and they're a fan, like I'd love to meet them.
And feel appreciated.
We
don't get to do what we do without people that listen 100%. To your music or come to shows.
Yeah, and people that like, they hide it. Like this happened actually recently at that same Mexican restaurant that I'm talking about. And it kind of, and I knew like the table, there was like two tables around us and they were super sweet. We're like, hey, just like love your music. I said, dude, thank you so much. We're there for probably like 20 minutes and we're eating. And I kind of noticed this lady at the bar and she was just, it was all over her face. It was like, all she was thinking about was like, when is a good time to like go over there? And I wanted to like look, I didn't, cause you don't want to assume and be like,
oh, I've done
hey,
that.
Why don't you come over?
Deal.
And she's like, no, my husband's here with someone else. I'm just spying on them. It's fine. I don't know why that was the example. That wasn't what was happening with this lady. But I watch her and all the tables and our friends that were with us watch all of this go down because she gets up and she walks all the way to the bathroom. And what feels like a half a mile of her walking, she has her phone like this,
like
people
chest.
Just like she's texting,
yeah.
But it's like right up against her chest, and I'm just like, we all see you, and I kind of like point at the camera, you know, just kind of like jokingly,
this.
Like we get it,
yeah.
And I thought like for sure she'd get in the bathroom, look at it, and be like, oh my goodness, I'm so embarrassed, and come over and be like, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to like film you. She comes back and like everybody around the table is like, you know, that woman was like filming you, right? And I was like, oh no, I saw. And then she comes back and does the same thing. The whole way back, dude.
Just films all the way back.
The film's all the way back. Never comes over, never says anything. And that's the weirdest to me.
And let's make a statement here together.
Yeah.
Because I try to say it a lot. I would love to take a picture with you.
Yeah.
As long as I'm not eating with my kids that no one knows about, my secret kids.
Yeah.
Like
Ben.
Yes.
John. Kevin.
I it's a compliment to me.
Yeah.
But you're right. Sometimes when someone's holding their phone and they're holding it just a little too pointy, you're like...
It's like, we know.
Yeah, I know. Just, we know. I would love to take a picture.
Like, you don't text like this.
Yes.
You know, like, there's a certain way you hold the phone, and that's for sure not it.
This festival and concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your next stop before attending your next concert. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring. You're talking about men's boots, women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition, timeless style, always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort, little to no break-in period. Like, it's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Plus, direct consumer pricing keeps the value on your feet, the money in your pocket. So stop by your local Tecovas store. Have a complimentary drink. Shop the new styles. You like the smell of leather or no?
I love it.
Yeah. That's what the whole store basically is. Fresh leather.
Yep.
Friendly staff. Or like the smell of staff?
I don't know. I guess I'm sure they smell good there.
Many stores have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. What a gift, too. Regular live music and events. There is no in-store experience like this. If you can't make it to a store, just visit tecovas.com.
Tecovas.com. Tecovas.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tecovas.com. Find your new favorite pair of boots today. Willie Nelson, Waylon Jennings, Kris Kristofferson. How did the biggest names in outlaw country start a musical revolution? Through one woman's vision from one tiny living room. Don't miss Mandy Moore as Sue Brewer in the new scripted Audible original, The Boar's Nest, Sue Brewer and the Birth of Outlaw Country Music. Discover the true untold story of the extraordinary woman behind the outlaw country music movement and its biggest stars. Brewer shaped the sound and soul of country music as we know it today, despite never picking up an instrument herself. Lovingly dubbed as the Boar's Nest, Sue's place was an intimate staging ground where a new breed of singer-songwriters, wounded souls, wayward upstarts. That's where they would spur each other and tap into something bigger and something realer. Starring Mandy Moore and featuring Eben Moss Backrack as Shel Silverstein and TJ Osborne as Johnny Cash alongside a full ensemble cast. Audible invites you to enter the Boar's Nest and experience the rise of a musical revolution. One woman, one time, one place. The Boar's Nest, Sue Brewer, and the birth of outlaw country music. Listen now at audible.com/theboarsnest.
Hey, it's Amy Brown here to talk about the incredible work that's being done by St. Jude Children's Research Hospital and to ask you today to join me in becoming a partner in HOPE. When you make a donation to St. Jude, you're helping an organization that has helped push the overall childhood cancer survivor rate from 20% to more than 80%. And I can tell you from personal experience, that number and the hope that it brings is invaluable. Families do not have to worry about a thing. Treatment is covered, travel, housing, food. And when you're a family that's going through this, like imagine you're a parent, your kid gets cancer. You need to focus on that child. You don't need to be worrying about other things, and financial stuff can get really stressful. St. Jude covers it. Your support means families never receive a bill from St. Jude for treatment. And when you sign up for just $19 a month, you're going to get the new This Shirt Saves Lives tee. So join me in helping St. Jude in the fight against childhood cancer. Become a partner in HOPE and text Bobby to 785-833. That's B-O-B-B-Y to 785-833.
So Natural Dam was how many people?
511.
Wow, good for you. I'm 700. Mountain Pine, 700.
Solid. Oh, you guys are
we're big
doing
city.
Well,
yeah,
dude.
We're a big city.
I honestly don't think, like it says 511, but that's been there since I've been a kid. And I know for a fact that there can't be, unless there are people that are literally living underground, I've never seen 500 people there. Maybe 200.
So
never seen them.
In Natural Dam, what school did you go to?
I had to go. So for a while, I went to a school in Fort Smith.
Union Christian Academy?
And it was River Valley at the time. So I had to drive. It took like 50 minutes to get to school because there was Cedarville High School, and nothing against Cedarville, but at the time, it was just like, it just wasn't a great place to go to school. And it was just kind of, there was a lot of just stuff going on there. My parents were just like, yeah, we don't think that that's necessarily where we're going to send our kids. But now it's gotten a lot better. Now there's a lot of great schools kind of around there. But I ended up graduating from Van Buren High School, which was like probably 20 minutes from Natural Dam. So it wasn't bad. But growing up, that was a long drive. And I homeschooled till I was like fifth grade.
What kid were you in high school? What were you known as? Shay is the, were you the singer? Were you the?
I think... Like, yeah, a little bit.
The trait that people knew most about you was what?
Probably, honestly, more that I was kind of like the funny guy, I would say, because I didn't like sing a ton. I did, like, I was definitely kind of known for that, but I was definitely the class clown, I would say. But yeah, I did sing at like events, like randomly. I would do like, we had chapel. It was a Christian school, so I would sing in chapel.
Would it shock
like
people
that
you were so good because you didn't do it all the time?
Yeah, sometimes. I remember when I came to school, because I started like halfway through fifth grade. And so I remember I like, they asked me to sing at chapel, and that was like my first, I had sang in church and like, you know, done that whole thing, but that was like my first like real world at school. It was like halfway through the year and I came in, sang at chapel. It was my moment. Felt really good.
At what age did you go, oh, I'm not just good for here in a small town. I'm actually good enough to go and try something outside of what I'm accustomed to.
Yeah. I was 8 years old when we first started coming to Nashville, because we would make these little trips, because I would sing with my sisters. I have two older sisters. Erica is the oldest, and then Gabby. And we would sing. We'd travel around and, like, you know, just kind of for fun. We'd go to churches and do the whole deal. And when I was about eight, we came to Nashville. And at that point, I kind of told my dad, like, this is like what I want to do. That was just like, I didn't know that I was like, I think people a lot of times like kind of assume that I was like this, I don't want to say like prodigy, but like was like always insanely good at singing, and was just like, that wasn't necessarily the case. We just, everyone in my family did it. And I think just for the sheer fact that I was young, people would be like, oh, he's really good. But we were in small, you know, this was small towns. So it's kind of like, I would take it as a grain of salt. And I think my parents would too. Like, they knew I was, you know, pretty good, but I don't know that it was, this is going to be your career kind of thing. That kind of came honestly later. And I did it, you know, I was coming to Nashville since I was eight, but it wasn't, I never knew, there wasn't a ton of people that were just like, this is undeniable. Like, they knew that I was good, but it wasn't until I was a little bit older where we had a couple people be like, oh, you guys could do this. But it was never, I don't know.
You go to college for a year,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And then you go, I need to go do music.
Yeah.
What was the point in going to school where it clicked? Where I was like, it's going to be tough, but I got to get out of school. And
It wasn't actually a school. It was actually a ministry school. So I went there. It was like a 9-month program, and I had a full ride to go to like a music school. And I decided right before, because my sister Gabby had decided she was going to go up to Pittsburgh to go to this like 9-month, you know, program. And I was just like, I'm going to go with you. I'm going to do this. And it was kind of that I wasn't quite sure what I was going to do with my life. I was about to graduate, and I didn't want to go to school for something that I already felt like I didn't think I was going to like learn. And if I was going for like engineering or something like that, which is probably what I would have done, I didn't want to go to school for like a performance major, you know, and like learn how to sing. I just felt like that wasn't really the vibe. And so, yeah, I kind of took that 9 months and lived in Pittsburgh. And then right after that, I moved back home, which is when kind of the whole T-Pain thing happened.
Which is an interesting thing too, because when you can really sing, you can also kind of pick where you sing.
Yeah.
And even I give Garth as an example. He was singing rock songs.
Yeah.
He was, he was kind of finding his place early. Yeah. So how do you get discovered because what was it called? What was T-Pain? Was it called Nappy Boy?
Nappy Boy.
How do you get hooked up with them? How do they see you? What are the steps that led you to go there? Did you move to Atlanta for a while?
I did move to Atlanta. So I'd lived in Pittsburgh, and my sister she was super good. She a good dancer. Like, she was a choreographer and did all this stuff. And she had met this guy named Mike, who was actually a backup dancer for T-Pain. And so we kind of all were hanging out there for a little while. And long story short, we get back to Arkansas after, you know, the school, after the 9 months, and we're there. And I just randomly get like a text, was like, hey, what are you doing? And I knew he had worked with T-Pain, and I guess he had sent some YouTube video of mine to T-Pain. And I was at Van Buren, actually, and I was in a movie. I'll never forget this. And he was like, hey, like, he wants to, like, you know, FaceTime you or whatever. And I was just like, I was in this movie and I didn't have any service. And I was like, this is the craziest thing ever. So I go out of the movie, and my friend was like one of the managers
watching
there.
A movie.
Was watching a movie.
Didn't you think he was like filming a movie?
Yeah.
I thought he was like doing Sling Blade in Arkansas.
You might have heard of this movie. It's called Hot Rod. It was like this little project I was working on.
So you leave the theater.
Yeah, so I leave the theater. So I walk outside, and I didn't have any Wi-Fi, and the service wasn't good enough. So I had to get on Wi-Fi. I think it was a FaceTime call. I can't remember if that was even a thing then, but either way, I didn't have any service. I had to like go get on the Wi-Fi. So my friend was the manager there and like gave me the Wi-Fi password. And I'm in like this back room at the movie theater, like FaceTiming or whatever, T-Pain. And he was like, hey, I want you to come to Memphis. Like we're playing a show there. It was him and Chris Brown. I want you to come, you know, play with us and do this whole deal. So I was just like, yeah, all right, let's
do
it.
What does do this whole deal mean?
I have no idea.
Oh, yeah.
To this day, I don't know what that meant. You know those moments like you get the call and you're just like, yeah, whatever it is, I'm down.
Yeah.
I'm in. That got me into a lot of trouble probably at some points in my life. Like whatever that is, I'm doing it.
So let's go. Do you go to Memphis?
I did. I went to Memphis.
Do you drive by yourself? How, but like, because you don't know what's happening. Yeah, so
I took an Uber there. Yeah. I was like, oh, this is crazy. Uber actually was not a thing then, I guess. But my sister, Gabby, she drove me up there. So I drove up there with her. We went to the show and met with him and basically go on the bus afterwards. And I think it was like T-Pain and his wife and Mike and all these people. And I'm just like singing. And just he was like, I want to sign you. You know, and I didn't know what that, I just heard, you know, I'm going to sign you. I didn't know what that entailed at the time or what that even, you know, looked like. But yeah, they ended up, you know, because I was writing, even when I was with him, when I ended up signing to him, I moved to Roswell, Georgia, which is out there, you know, just a suburb of Atlanta. And I started writing all kinds of stuff. I mean, I had been writing like country and I had been writing pop. I've been writing like R&B, like all this kind of stuff. But I knew that I wanted to do country. And that's kind of how the song that he had even heard me covering, I think was a country song. And so he was like, you know, this is what I want you to do. This is blah, blah, blah. And basically what I did for that year and a half that I lived in Atlanta was just go into the studio every day till like 5 a.m. and just like write to beats and everything else. And it was just kind of it's kind of one of those just kind of honing my craft moments of like, I didn't really get anywhere. Like we didn't release any music or anything like that.
What was his goal with you?
I don't know. I'm not sure. The overall goal, you know, that was kind of like pitched to me was we want to sign you to a major, you know, we want to get you to Nashville at some point, but
so they had country music in mind for you.
Yeah.
Even though it was T-Pain.
Yeah.
And we all go, oh, hip hop, R&B.
Yeah. And it was kind of one of those things that I didn't even have like my sound. I didn't really know what I was doing either. I was just writing songs and I had all these, you know, songs that I was writing that wasn't necessarily, I mean, they were like fine, but my identity was not found yet. You know, I just didn't really know what I was doing. So it's kind of somewhere in there. It's hard to put, unless I looked at a timeline, it's hard to put all this stuff into a timeline. But I remember there was a moment when I was there where I was just like, what? We haven't put out any music. We're not doing anything. I have no idea. There was not really, the contract I signed was a 360 and I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't have a lawyer at the time. So I signed this ridiculous deal. And I think it was all good intentions on all parties, but I ended up at some point being like, I've got to go to Nashville. Like I just have to get there. So I was getting, I mean, I had no money because I was getting paid, you know, whatever it was. I think I was getting paid maybe like, it was like $1,500 for $2,000 or $1,500 for like, you know, per month to like live on and stuff. But I was having to pay like $500 for my, you know, my rent in Atlanta. And then I had to pay $500 off the top to like my manager that was, you know, this guy that had, you know, I had met in Pittsburgh. He was now my manager. And so yeah, it was a whole thing. So I had about, after I was moving to Nashville, I was left with about like $400 to like eat, and like pay all everything on after this and go out and expect to like, you know, try to meet people in Nashville, which $400 in a month is not a lot of spending cash.
How did you get out of the deal?
It ended up, you know, when I met Dan, it was a whole, I mean, there was a lot of people that kind of helped me get that out of the deal. And, you know, whenever we had met, it became kind of like a, oh man, what's going to happen? Because this is like a problem. I'm still in this deal.
Are you out of it now?
Yeah. Yeah. So, but it was, yeah, that was a pretty rough little time there for a little while because it was a lot of feelings, you know, feelings hurt on, I think, on all sides. Because it was just this, I don't know, I don't want to go like too into detail about it, but it was a rough time, I think, in his life. He was going through a lot and it was just kind of, I was just stuck. There was nobody to like talk to. He had gone away to kind of deal with some personal stuff. And yeah, it was just kind of, all right, well, I'm in this deal and we got to try to figure out. Whenever we were talking to these labels, it was like, it kind of became an issue because it rolled really fast. When Dan and I met and we had kind of met with, you know, Jason Owen and Scooter, and things were kind of rolling. It was just like, well, this is a problem. And I was like, I was freaking out because I'm like, this is a huge opportunity, and we finally got something rolling.
Tethered to something,
yeah,
that you can't get out of.
Yeah, and it was a full 360 deal. You know, it wasn't
which means
like
everything you're doing, everything. They have a piece of, not yeah. just music, but if you put out a shirt,
yeah,
if
touring,
yeah,
everything,
all of it.
And that was yeah, it was a rough time, but we ended up, you know, really, you know, Scooter and Jason had a huge part of kind of getting me out of that deal. And but yeah, man, it was a tough, you know, start, you know, because it was just even on that first record, like there was a lot being taken out, you know, and it was just kind of like, thankfully I didn't have, you know, a family at that time or no, you know, it's not like I wasn't completely broke whenever we had, you know, Dan and I had met and finally signed, you know, we had like a lot more money than I had, you right. know, to begin with. It was enough to live on, but they did a great job of kind of helping me get out of that. And, you know, Warner Brothers and Espo and all those guys, it was, yeah, everybody was really good. So,
the legend of the fort, which in different places we've talked about, but you guys met in a living room fort.
Yeah.
At a house, which you've been back by. I've even seen you guys post it before.
Yeah.
Dan was living in that house.
Yeah.
And you went over to the house?
I did. So I was living with my buddy actually at the time. I think I was maybe, I don't even remember if I even was paying him, but I was basically sleeping on his couch for like a little while. His name was Brandon Metcalf, great guy. And he had a studio and I was like working a lot with him when I had moved to Nashville and kind of had my place. And there was a guy named Andrew that just one night, we had been writing a lot. And he told me, he was like, man, I'm going over to these guys' house. They had a band at the time. He's like, they're having a house party. You know, you want to come with me? And I was just like, yeah, sure, let's do it. And at that time, it was just kind of like anytime you could go somewhere without spending any money and you knew that there was like, we knew that there was a keg. There, and I was like,
free
this
entertainment
is,
and a little bit of
great.
Nourishment. That's
yes.
all you're chasing.
That's all I was chasing. I was like, do you think I got like pizza or yeah. something? Like, I haven't eaten in like a couple of days. But it was like, yeah, we showed up at this house, and little did I know that that night was going to completely change my life.
You guys start talking that night. When was it that you said, okay, we're actually going to try something together, which means putting everything else aside? There's a difference in going, hey, we should do something together.
Yeah.
And going, we're doing something together. I would even say it's comparable to in that part of a relationship where you're just dating and
yeah.
you go, we're only dating each other now.
Yeah.
So that means nothing else can exist
yeah.
except us. What was that point where you guys finally said we're just dating each other?
Well, it was, you know, not until just a couple weeks ago. Yeah. it happened really naturally where Dan and I started writing. Really, I think it was either that next day or like the day after that we had met. We were jamming till probably like 4 a.m. or something like that. And I think we decided to write. So we get up the next day and we met at like a Starbucks or something. And then we ended up going to this guy that I was, Jesse Frazier. I'm sure that
he's
you're
been on this show. I know him and he's been here
love
before.
Love him. Yeah. One of the greatest guys. When I had, for a quick side note, so this all makes sense. Jesse, when I had first moved to town, I had a friend and I asked him, I was like, who is doing like beats? Because I had been writing to a lot of beats. I'd been writing like country songs to beats, which is now like a common thing, but it was just kind of becoming a thing then. And I was like, who is a great track guy in Nashville? And the first name that my friend was Nash Overstreet, which is Paul Overstreet, songwriter. And he was like, Jesse Frazier. So I started writing with Jesse a lot. And then whenever Dan and I had met, I was like, let's go write with Jesse Frazier or at his place. So we ended up writing our first writing session. I think we wrote 2 songs that day. And one of them got put on hold that night for Rascal Flatts.
So what, you wrote a song that day.
Yeah.
They sent it out.
Yeah.
Maybe to Flatts because yeah. they thought it was sensible
yeah.
for them. That night it got put on hold?
I think it was that night. Yeah. Like when we got home, they were like, this is on hold for Flatts. And for us, we're like, things are heating up.
Wow.
Things are really, really good. Which, if you know, you know what a hold is. They never cut the song or anything like that. But for us, it was just like, it was legitimately like Rascal Flatts heard our song. That was a huge, and as small as that, you know, might seem now, you know, in our minds, it was such a big deal. Because it was, you know, you have these big dreams and you're coming to town. And it was kind of that first taste of like, whoa, this is like somebody who has done it, who is a successful artist, they liked our song and put it on hold. So that was a huge deal for us. And that was kind of the fuel to be like, we should, let's you know, keep doing this because we liked, you know, what songs we were writing.
Would you compare that early part of you and Dan, and I don't mean this facetiously at all, but when you meet a girl, like when you and Hannah meet, and you're like, oh my God, this is it. Like, it's similar to that feeling with him as it was. Because if you're writing till 4 a.m, that's what you do when you talk to a girl till 4 a.m.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think for either of us, we just were kind of, it was different than when I met my wife, because when I met Hannah, I literally told my friend Benji Davis, who's a writer in town, I told him like right then, it was in Arkansas. It was like our first date. It was at George's Majestic Lounge. And I like walked her out to her car, and I got back on the bus, and I was like, I'm going to marry that girl. Literally said like that night. With Dan, it was like, we were having fun writing these songs. We didn't necessarily like, we thought they were good, but we didn't necessarily be like, we're going to make, this is it. Oh. We're not going to, or marry each other. Neither one of those were on my mind. And I think it just kind of happened naturally to where like, we thought the songs were good, but as you do, you know, when it's your work, we thought it was good. And I think the most exciting thing for us was there was an aha moment, but it wasn't necessarily like, oh, we're going to be a duo. It was like, this is the kind of music that I've been trying to write. This is all, like, everything has kind of led to this. You know, it was like the stuff that I had been wanting to write, but just hadn't quite found the sound yet.
So are you saying that when you two first started, it was like we found partners in creating more so than we're going to go be a duo?
It was exactly that. It was like, oh man, this is the kind of stuff. It was like better than any of the stuff that I had been writing in town. And I think for both of us, it was just kind of like, well, this is like, we got something special here.
So then how long until you decide you're going to actually pursue the artist thing together?
Yeah. So we started to, all these songs we've been writing, because we did start to write a lot together. And so the more that we wrote, we would just start doing like these writer's rounds and like playing these songs for our friends. And like our friends and everybody were getting hype on these songs. Like, this is the greatest song. Like we were in 507 Morton Avenue was the place. I can say it because we've said it a million times. I'm sure that the owner of that house hates us for probably talking about it all the time. But it was like, I think we went to the house one time, I specifically remember. And I think it was Pete Tracy, who now does all of our video stuff. It was his birthday. And I remember we shot like a fake music video for one of the songs because we thought it was so good. And it was just like, it was just ridiculousness. We were having so much fun. And it was just like, man, this stuff is really cool. So we started to play all the music out, like rounds and stuff. And then Dan and I, we had eventually like, there was actually an opportunity that we had to go down. And I had booked a show. It was just like Shea Mooney. And we were opening up, we did two shows together without actually being like a band at all. It was just like he was there with me and we were playing all the songs we had written. And one was at George's opening for Chris Allen. And I thought I made it then. I was like, this is, you know, things are really starting to take off. And then another one we played was in Conway at UCA. There was this kid who booked me and I thought it was going to be like the biggest show ever. And I think it was in their like little performing arts theater, which probably holds like, I don't know, maybe 1,500 people. And there was probably like 15 people in there. And right after that, we went down to Austin, Texas, because my lawyer had set up this like showcase, basically, for us. And we went down, we put together a band, the whole deal. Dan and I drive down in my truck, and we ended up playing the show. And it was, I'm not kidding, there was honestly probably like 4 people in the room. And one was my lawyer, one was like a bartender girl in the back, and then our friend Paul DiGiovanni, which ended up writing How Not To, for us, used to be in the band Boys Like Girls. He was there, and then Dan's lawyer, and there was like no other people there. We rehearsed for like 4 days, and we thought it was gonna be like our big break, and it wasn't our big break. But at that time, it was, I think on the way back from that trip, we kind of made the decision of like, we've been doing these shows together, like we should do a duo. And I think it's hard to kind of put all this in my mind to like line it up, but kind of when we were writing all these songs, there was a guy who worked for Scooter Braun at the time. His name was Nano, and he knew Scooter, and he had kind of been talking to Scooter, I guess, about us. And during that time, Scooter ends up, we were at a writing session, and we had kind of decided like, all right, we're going to do this duo thing. And once we kind of decided that was when Scooter had heard about us, and we were in a writing session at a guy named Danny Orton's house, and he FaceTimes us and basically says like, I want to work with you. And Ed Sheeran was there, which is really funny because he was like, will you guys play that song that I like? It was a song called Stop, Drop, and Roll that was actually on our first record. We had like just written it, and he was like, play that song. So we played it, and at the end, he was like, my friend wants to hear the song because he really loves it, because we had sent him maybe like a demo or something. And Ed Sheeran like pops in. He's like, hey guys, how are you? Which is like the worst Ed Sheeran impression. Hey guys, how are you? And we like sang Stop, Drop, and Roll acoustic, like over FaceTime to him. And that was kind of the start of it.
Did you go and play for different labels?
Yeah. Yeah. I think that at the beginning we had, at first we had pitched, you know, we wanted to, you know, be writers was like the whole point. We wanted to, you know, be signed. And we were working with, you know, some guys and Rohan, who now works with us at Warner, who's our A&R guy. He was kind of working, you know, we were trying to, you know, get all these meetings with publishers and things. And it was really funny in the very beginning, we were meeting with like everybody. Cause at this point we still had zero money, like at all coming in. And Dan and I used to like, we would go out to like a publishing meeting and we would always like, we would make them take us to dinner. Like we'd always take the dinner meetings because it was like, that was free food and drink for the night. It was fantastic. So I think we took out a couple people, which now is funny because there's a couple of our now friends in town of like, man, I was a new publisher and you guys maybe take, I spent like 10 grand on you guys and you didn't sign with us. And I was like, sorry, dude. But yeah, we were meeting with, you know, publishers at first. And then kind of when we decided to come together, we met with several labels in town. And
was there ever a bidding war for you?
A little bit. There was like, at that time we had all these songs, you know, that we had written. We had, you know, a couple hundred songs that we had, and we were doing all these demos and everything. And we had, I think that the demo that we were bringing around to people was like 22 songs that we had on this thing. We're like,
holy crap.
And they would just go in there and be like, all right, you know, just pick a song and play it. And, there was kind of, at the end, you know, this little bit of a bidding war, but we had kind of, we met with Warner Brothers and we had met Espo, and I think it was like 10:30 in the morning, and we went in and we played with them, and they were so passionate about it from the very beginning. And Espo, if you know Espo at all, he's very passionate about music, loves music. And it was like 10:30 in the morning and he was like, you guys aren't leaving this room until you sign with us. And so we were like, well, this guy's pretty passionate. But it was kind of crazy. And it's hard to even like remember all that because it all happened so quickly after that. It's, you know, people see it as like, oh, this happened like overnight. If you guys just became an overnight success, but it was really this accumulation of me doing my thing and Dan touring since he was like 13 years old. And it was kind of that moment where it all kind of came to a head. And it was just like, I don't know. I think when we signed, it was 2013 when we put out like our first single, like that summer, and we were going on like radio tour. And it was just like, it was crazy. It was just a crazy time. And it seems like yesterday. And now that I look back, that was, you know, 2013. Now here we are in 2020.
I'm going to come back to 19, you and me, in one second. But something you said when we were talking about you meeting Hannah and going, I'm going to marry her, is that you walked back to your bus.
Yeah.
So were you guys touring through Arkansas when you guys went on your first date?
Yeah. Yeah. So I had known about her. Like we had a bunch of mutual friends. She was Miss Arkansas. Okay. Yeah. So if you go through Franklin, Arkansas, still a pretty big billboard. It's a pretty big deal. So she's a lot cooler than me. Definitely a lot better looking. But yeah, we were on tour. We were, I want to say it was our first time playing Georges, like legitimately, like as a headliner. And that was like one of our first times playing there. And I was pretty excited about it because we had like, you know, that was the hometown show. And it was, yeah. And we had been talking a little bit. And I basically begged
Facebook?
Her. Yeah, I think it was like Facebook or Twitter or something. I don't know. But I had invited her to the show. And I know in her mind, now that I've like talked to her, she was like, this is not going to happen. Because she was like unimpressed. She was like, I'm not dating a singer. You know, and I was just like, I was doing everything I could that night. Whenever I was like, I knew kind of like, I was looking for her the whole time.
So you were like looking at her section too.
I was looking at her section. Yeah. And yeah. I was smoldering, you know, now that I know how dumb I look doing that. I wish I wouldn't have done that, but still worked out. But yeah, it was crazy. I was looking for her the whole time being like, all right, I know she's here. And if she wasn't there, I would have been devastated.
Well, and if she wasn't there, that section would have had a great night. They got a lot of you.
Yeah.
That section.
There was probably like a couple people in that section that were like, oh,
42 C's feeling it.
He wants me. He wants me.
I'm going to play 19 You and Me. Here's a little bit of this.
Watching that body sway.
This is the first one, right?
It's the first one.
Now, you said a second ago too, and I think a lot of people look at you guys and go, wow, what an overnight success. Everything's roses. This song, which did wonderfully for you guys, only hit number 9.
Yeah, it didn't even hit that. It went to 11.
Okay, well, my note says peaked at 9. So one of the charts.
Okay. Well, I don't think that it ever peaked. I think it was 11, like on both charts.
And did you feel like when that happened, though, that was huge, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it was kind of that. We were stoked. I mean, I remember when Nada told us that, you know, our song was going to be on the radio. We about, I literally blew out the speakers in my Jeep, like listening to that whenever we found that out. It was like the biggest deal to have a song on the radio and to be like on a radio tour was all like, I can't believe this. It was insane. It felt like hitting the lottery, which really, you know, to do what we do is, you know.
Then you come off with a next song here and Show You Off comes out.
Yeah.
And doesn't do as well.
No.
Like my note here says peaked at 19.
Yeah. It didn't do good, Bobby.
And my point in saying this is
we haven't played that song in years. Yeah.
So you don't play it anymore?
No. I hope that's not anyone's favorite song.
It was a top 20, but when a song doesn't do as well as your first one, are you starting to like hang your head a little bit?
You know, I think it was all kind of, we were just so stoked to be in it all. I don't think we thought about it too much. Cause it's kind of, it would have been worse. Honestly, it would have been worse, I think, if 19 You and Me would have been a number one, and then we followed it up with a 19. Since it was kind of this, like, it still felt like, all right, we still have, like, our chance to, like, have the song. And I don't think that any of us, like, it was tempo, but, like, looking back, neither one of us were, like, stoked on that song. We were about 19 You and Me, and it's still one of our biggest songs. Because, you know, at that time, it was, like, platinum. It was, like, a big, you know, it sold a bunch. It did really well for us. But we had put it out to radio immediately when we went on radio tour. So by the time we got to the West Coast, the East Coast had been playing it. Like they had played it like 1500 times. So like we didn't feel, we knew it went number one in almost like every market, but didn't, just not all at the same time. So we were like feeling good about that. But when Show You Off kind of, you know, didn't do its thing, we kind of, it was kind of a, you know, like, man, I wish that would have done better. But I don't think that any of us was like super passionate about the song to begin with. So it didn't sting as much. But the third one, that was kind of the pinnacle of, or not the pinnacle, but really the
start of it.
That would have been, if that one didn't go number one, that's when you start to be like, oh, this is.
My connection to Show You Off is that I remember having you guys up in the studio and, because you guys had come in like three times so far.
Yeah.
And mostly it was because we knew each other.
Yeah.
More than anything. You guys were really good, but it wasn't because you had a bunch of number ones.
Yeah.
One, you were fun on the air. Two, you were really good on the year, and we had a personal relationship. So
yeah.
I was like, you guys are coming in. And we did a bit together where you guys came in and sang Boys to Men songs.
Yeah.
And it goes up on YouTube. And this is how you guys have kind of affected my life from a side part. We put it up on YouTube. Scooter, your manager, is watching you guys on YouTube.
Yeah.
Sees me interviewing you guys, sees us doing our thing where it's like, I'm not great at being on the radio, but I'm great at doing a good radio show.
Yeah.
And he's like, dude, we should do TV work together. So him and I get to know each other and start working on TV projects together,
yeah.
Which has in turn, layer by layer, I've gotten to work on a lot of projects.
Yeah.
Just working, but because your relationship with him and him watching you and seeing me, and so that song.
I mean, we're fully responsible for your career.
My
I mean,
point
if you
is,
literally
if it
look
wasn't
at
for
it,
you, bring in the check.
You're welcome.
For yes.
Is this the part they said you had something special? is this what it is?
But that song, Nothing Like You, is the one where I'm, or not Nothing Like You, but Show You Off is the
yeah.
one where I was like, oh, that was a big part of my career.
That's so cool.
Because
I think you had said that before, but that's. That's pretty crazy.
Once I was with Scooter in a meeting, and we FaceTimed you guys, and you guys were in a car somewhere together.
I did. Yeah.
And I was with Ed Sheeran.
Yeah.
No, I wasn't with Ed Sheeran.
I was like, yeah, I totally remember that.
Nothing Like You goes number one.
Yeah.
And so this is a big one, but I tell you, where it really started to seem like you guys were going next level to me was the build up to From the Ground Up.
Yeah.
Because I started to hear people go, oh, this next song From the Ground Up is next level.
Yeah.
Because you had a number one. And number ones are hard to get, and good for you, and great, but now you're on the path.
Took us 47 weeks to
but
get that number
did
one.
Did you feel like From the Ground Up was like the first real respect you got from the community of
yeah.
art?
Yes, it was. It was, because Nothing Like You was that song where like it was a hit, but it was just kind of that, it wasn't the song that it was just like, oh, Dan and Shay, like this is going to be it. Like, obviously it was a hit. But there's a big difference between like a number one song and something that truly like really impacts your career. And it did for us at the time. You know, we would go out. We were also headlining like these small shows. And you could tell like when we played that song, people would freak out because it was a hit. And I think it was more because they were like, yay for us. Mm-hmm. And not necessarily, you know, out of that, people weren't, you know, there wasn't a lot of respect factor there. Like you said, like From the Ground Up was the first where people, even in town, was like, okay, I think these guys might be here to stay.
That's
you know?
When I felt it was getting legitimate for yeah. you guys as not just singers, but artists.
Yeah.
And there is a difference. It's
yeah.
It was like a 360, again, we'll use the word 360. It was like a 360 degree, like everything they're doing is right on. This is it.
Yeah. And I think it's that point where it was the first time we were really, really excited of like, we kind of started to hear, even from like the songwriting community, of like, damn, like I wish I would have written that song. It was kind of that moment. Like, I don't think there was very many people. We did with like 19 You and Me. There were some people would be like, that's, you know, that's my favorite song. Nothing Like You, like our first hit and Show You Off. People weren't being like, I wish that I would have written that song. There's been times in my career, like, I wish I'd maybe didn't write that song. You know, it's like, I'm thankful for every, you know, ounce of everything we've ever gotten to do. But that was kind of the first song. And it was very personal to us too. You know, we had written that about our grandparents, and it was kind of that moment where just like, man, this is crazy. You know, that's when things started really to happen for us.
How Not Two hits. We were talking about Adam Hambrick earlier.
Yeah.
One of the writers of this song.
Yeah.
I would play it because Adam had to come out and fill in when I would do early Raging Idiot stuff. And so I had to learn this song and try to do his background because he would sing it because, you know, if you write a song, you get to sing it.
Absolutely. And he's fantastic,
yeah.
too.
Yeah.
So great.
This song goes number one. Now, most of these are number ones. I'm going to bring up maybe a sore spot for a second.
Yeah.
Because Road Trippin'.
It's a little oh, heart.
Road Trippin' hit number 36.
Yeah.
So, one, did you want to put the song out? Two, did you jump off it early or did it just fizzle out?
We pulled it. We did pull that song because it was, you know, it wasn't that I like hated that song. Like, I don't like to play it. Like, we don't play it live. It was just kind of one of those moments where it was a tempo. It was something that we felt like we kind of needed and our fans loved it. It was like in live, it like did really well. And it was kind of that moment where it was the best move I think we could have made in our career. Even still looking back, that was the best move at that time was to pull that song. Because that set up, you know, what
the
was next.
The next chapter of your freaking career.
Yeah.
When it was like, and you went from being a strong artist to now
yeah.
kaboom time. When Tequila hits, it changed the whole world.
Yeah.
In my mind, your whole world changed.
Everything
I don't know
changed.
What happened in your world.
Everything changed.
But when this song hit, and I remember the lead up to it.
Yeah.
And I remember talking to Nicole before it came out, Nicole Galyon.
Yeah.
And this song just shook up everything.
Yeah. It was that moment where I remember whenever Road Trip, like when we were picking the single, that wasn't necessarily like my choice. I remember we brought in, you know, a bunch of people to be like, you know, what should be the next single. And, you know, it was back and forth between a couple songs. You know, we had, you know, Already Ready on our last record, or the second album, and there was a couple other like contenders for singles, and the problem was you know, our fans, we had done this, you know, such a grassroots thing that our fans were like buying the album and they were listening to every song, so it was a little bit tough to pick a single because they had already really, you know, kind of taken in that record and were kind of like, you know, they loved the record, but they had kind of heard all these songs, and I don't think that there was any single that we could have put out that would have kind of taken us to the point where, you know, Tequila did. And I don't think that if we would have put Tequila out in a different time that it would have worked in the way that it did. I mean, it still would have been a hit, but the way that all happened, like looking back, of being like, all right, we pulled Road Trippin' and now this is a reset and we're gonna do this.
It was the first of a new whole project, right?
It was. Yeah, it was the first of a whole new project. And I remember like we'd had these songs and we were really excited about them, and we had had, I think, like a few like singles that were contenders for like the first thing that we put out there. And I remember Dan and I were in London and we had a talk. And I remember like before we cut Tequila, I was such a fan of the song because I wasn't a writer on that. It was Dan and Jordan Reynolds and Nicole Galyon. And I remember hearing that song and I was just like, that I want to sing that. I think that'll sound good with us doing that. And it was just that moment where like we were all in. And I remember talking with a label, and Dan and I were like in this little room. We were playing in London, I think, and we were on tour over there, and we had this whole conversation of like, we can't, there was a lot of people on the label, like, we can't put out a ballad first. We just can't do this. And I remember we were just having this whole conversation. And I was just like, we're putting this song out. This has to be our first one. Dan and I were so like adamant about it. Like, look, we're taking the reins. This is it. And I just remember like making that decision, and we put out the song, and it was just, you know, the lead up to that. We tried to, you know, we just didn't know what was good. That was a kind of a scary time, but at the same time, we were very excited because I feel like out of anything we had done, there's like the songs that we had done. Like, I was very proud of like From the Ground Up, and even like 19 You and Me there, and How Not To. Those were the first times whenever I felt like I could play something for like my friends and then be like, that's sick. You know, I love that. But Tequila was like the moment where everyone was like, oh my God, like that's crazy. Like, this is, it felt cool. Like, it that song alone, like, we put that out, it made us like the cool thing to go see in town when that song hit. It changed everything pretty much like overnight. I mean, it was just insane.
I still think that it's the song that I've seen screwed over more for awards than any other song in my history here. And I say that not joking.
Oh,
and,
man.
And I know you're going to be like, oh, well, shucks.
Oh, well, shucks.
But I do think that. I would even, you know, talking with Dan or Nicole or people that I have, I would be like, I can't believe it. I'll tell you, one time I was presenting the CMA for Duo of the Year, and I was just, and I love John and TJ from Brothers Osborne. Yeah. I have a close relationship with them. But in my mind, I was like, this is so damaged. There's not been a duo that's had a bigger year. That you had been Speechless, Tequila, you'd been touring. I was like, I'm going to read their name, and then they're going to pick me up, and it's going to be a whole, we're going to have like the greatest moment.
It was popping champagne moment.
And it wasn't, and I opened up the card it was on ABC, and I said, in the winner for Duo of the Year, and I saw Brothers Osborne. I called them up, and I thought what they did even then, I think they were shocked.
Yeah.
Because they give you guys a shout out up there.
Yeah, which felt like, we didn't know what to do, like, you're doing good. We'll just be down here.
Everyone panic.
I don't know. I can't smile any bigger right now.
Speaks to their character to do that. But I know that it has to, and I'll speak from personal, and you can say whatever you want. At times, when you're having great success, but no one is giving you the cred from where you're living, it sucks.
Yeah.
And you can say, but I've had that happen to me too. It sucks. It hurts a little bit.
Yeah.
And at that point, I was like, holy mother. Like, right now, they're not getting it from home. But when they do, they're going to own home.
Yeah.
And I wonder how you kind of got through that.
I think Dan took it a little bit harder than I did, just inherently, because he, I don't want to say like I don't do anything, but like, Dan puts his entire life into this. And I do as well. But I, you know, obviously now, like, I have a family. There are other things that really, you know, and that's for him too. You know, everything's changed. He has a wife, you know, and pretty much a family with his dogs. And there are other things, obviously, that matter to him. But I think that really, you know, that was just a lot of months going into making this stuff and the build up to this. And when you go and you lose, it just sucks. Like, there's never, and it doesn't just suck for us. You know, it sucks for everybody. It's horrible to lose. And it's terrible to get up there. And the whole concept of award shows, now that we've like, and after that, we won like everything. And it was cool, but it was just kind of like, it sucks that a lot of artists, you feel like you live and die by these award shows. And it's just not the truth. You know, it's amazing to be recognized by your peers, but I think that your peers do recognize you in other ways. It just sucks when it's publicly like you lost.
And you had such a monster year like nobody else had.
Yeah.
I think that to me, because the talent is so different and so just, it's premier talent. Every duo nominated, premier talent.
Yeah.
But you guys had, statistically speaking, in every count, chart, streams, tickets, there really wasn't something.
Yeah. That was what hurt. I think that's what hurts when you know that, like, you don't want to say like we deserve it, but if there is a metric, you know, what is the metric at that point? It's like, because you hope that it's just like whatever the biggest song was or like the biggest thing was, you would hope that would win, which is just not the case, which is, it sucks. If you win, it's great. But like sometimes that happens with artists when it's like, they know like that song probably should have won, you know, and every award show is different where it's, you know, the Grammys is more like a cred thing. It's not necessarily based on like what was the biggest song, which is why we were blown away when we did win a Grammy, because it was like, you know, That song was very commercially successful. So you're like, to win a Grammy for it was like kind of a surprise for us. We had no idea that was going to happen. But I don't know. It does suck, man. Like, you're there and they're zoomed in on you and they're just the waiting right for you
on, they're on
to
a knee,
say something.
And they're on a knee looking in your face, Shay, with a camera.
Yeah.
And it is from me to you.
Oh, dude. Closer than that. I mean, it's literally like, it's like a, you know, they're up there and you're trying to smile. And it's just like, it's a weird thing. It's kind of like if you're there. And people, you know, they get crap all the time because there's been in the past, like, people having a bad reaction, like, what? You know, and they catch that, like, we got you, you know, and they play that over and over again, like, oh man, like, Faith Hill. I have no idea if this has ever happened to Faith Hill, but
it
like,
did exactly did, happen did it happen to Faith Hill? Yeah, she was
like,
kidding. And
she was just like, what?
Yeah.
You know, and whatever that is, but it sucks because, like, turn it around and make it like a lottery. Like, there's three people in the room and you're going to win $1 million. And you put three of them, you put a camera on them. What do you think the other two are gonna do whenever they're like, ah, this person, and like the other two are like, no, I put everything I wanted on this. Like, this is everything. So it sucks. Like, of course you're going to have a bad reaction, but we all know now, like, they'll get you if you're not, you know, bummed out, because it sucks. Like, for everyone, it sucks. And it's just kind of, I don't know. And it's hard to see, like, to see other people, like, you know, lose. We kind of saw the other side of that, because every award show after that, we won, like, everything. And it was just kind of like, this is, like, now we're on the other side of this. And it's almost like, you're up there, and then you just remember, like, all these people right now hate us, because it sucks, you know, to be on the other side of that. And it's just, I don't know. I think the most important thing, we tried to not, you know, live and die by award shows, because it really is the most important thing to us, is to go out and to be able to sell out shows is, like, the biggest deal to us. Like, we want to be able to play to the most people that we can, and for our music to get out there, you know. But it definitely, for anyone to say, like, that it doesn't matter, like, it matters. Like, it definitely matters. And that momentum helps, like, to win an award show is huge. So it definitely sucks to, because in your heart, you're almost like, it wasn't good enough. But, like, what you did and what you put all those hours into of not sleeping for 2 years to make this record, it wasn't good enough. And that's what, like, really hurts, of just being like, damn, that's a bummer, you know?
Couple more of these real quick. Speechless hits number one, massive. Wedding Song Galore. It's the wedding song.
Yeah.
The video, the whole thing was, like, dialed in.
Yeah.
Like, you knew the lane of this song visually, sonically.
Yeah.
Nailed it. All to Myself. Made a lot of love to myself for this song. A lot of love. I'm going to ask you about 10,000 Hours. What was the process like to get a song with Justin Bieber? Were you already talking about doing something together eventually? Or did you have the song and Scooter go, look, what was that about?
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of, it all started, I mean, we obviously through Scooter, we had met, like, some people. Like, we had met Ed Sheeran through him. We had met Justin through him. We had been to LA a bunch of times, and we had met Justin a few times. And we always thought, like, man, it'd be so cool to, like, to get Justin on a song, because it's like, you know, he's one of the biggest pop stars in the world, you know? And it was just like that in our mind was like, of course we want to do a song with him, you know, especially since we have this connection. No one in country has this unique connection that we do, you know, through Scooter. And early on, we wanted to try to, you know, do something with him. We had pitched some things, and I'm really glad that it didn't happen. Whenever, you know, it might have happened, like, a long time ago, would not have been this. This is kind of the first time we had written this song in Nashville, Jesse Joe Dillon, Jordan Reynolds. And it was kind of that point where we had written the song, and we're like, this actually might be perfect for Justin. Because in that time, like, the timing of everything, of him being, you know, just getting married and all this stuff. And it was the first time that we felt like we were bringing something to the table where it wasn't just like, can we please get Justin Bieber on our song? It was, this would make sense for both of us. This would be, I think, big for both of us. You know, it would make sense. We had, like, because in before, it was just kind of like, you know, we were down here and we're like, can we please get Justin on our song? And then at that point, you know, we're out there, like, we're about to do arenas. We're a legitimate act, so we can kind of bring something to the table. And we just, you never know what's going to happen. It's not like we were like, okay, this is time, and this is for sure going to happen. We didn't know what was going to happen when we sent the song to him.
And but he just sent it to Scooter, or did he text Justin?
Yeah, we had sent it to JB. We had called him. No, we had just sent it to Scooter to see if, like, it was something that he would like before we just, like, you know, sent it over to Justin. And he was like, I think that this makes a lot of sense. And Justin heard it and he loved it and he resonated with it. I think, like we said, in the same way as we thought that he would like it, he liked it. And I just kind of, we couldn't believe it whenever they were like, yeah, this is gonna happen. So for months, like, we got his vocal and they had, like, changed some things and kind of made it his own. And it was crazy, like, getting that back. We had to sit on that for months and months.
Not
telling anybody about it. It was, like, the hardest thing we've ever done. Because it was like, you know, I'd literally, like, in my phone, I'd had, you know, a song with us and Justin Bieber, and it's like, I couldn't even talk about it. But it was just like, because if that gets out, you know, that's like a big leak. Like, maybe if, like, they found out we're coming out with a new song, like, that's probably not gonna, country songs don't really, like, leak, but songs with Justin Bieber on them, like, that's a, you know, worldwide, there's a lot of people trying to find that kind of stuff. So it was a crazy, crazy moment. And it was weird because I just knew, I had a feeling that it was going to be big for us, just because the timing of everything, like the momentum that we had going into this with Tequila, Speechless, and All of Myself, it was just that moment of like, people are not going to, they're not going to see this coming at all, you know? And it was crazy, man.
Before we wrap, I want to play one of my favorite songs of yours. It's called Your Love from 2011.
Oh my God. Smash.
It came in at 173 on the Afghanistan charts.
Oh, I was pretty big in Afghanistan. I can't even go there still. It was so big there.
And maybe City Lights with Gabby.
Oh yeah. Oh, these were great.
So what was the goal with these early songs?
I was just honestly, I was actually recording in Fayetteville with this guy named Mike Bailey, who like kind of looks like you, which is pretty funny. You guys look a lot alike, like the whole deal. He's got like wears black glasses, everything. You're like a much better looking
Thank
version
you.
Of him.
Waiting
you
for
are,
something
yeah.
like that. Yeah.
Yeah, he's like the, you know, almost like the poor man's version of that.
Yeah,
you know,
like the junior varsity.
The junior varsity. Yeah. Yeah, but yeah, I was just doing it for fun. I was like I think I was in high school at that time, just going to Fayetteville, recording songs for fun in this guy's house, and then I just would put them out.
And would you send that off to people though, hoping to get that next level, or were
no.
you just putting them out for fun?
No, I was putting them out, just like thinking like. You know, every day there are things that go viral. This is probably going to be it. It didn't work out. It didn't happen like that. But I was having fun. I think I probably made like tens of dollars off that stuff.
Good for you.
I still check my CD Baby sometimes.
Dang, what a reference, CD Baby.
Yeah, CD Baby. I had CD Baby.
Did you ever play music on MySpace?
No, I didn't know. I think MySpace had kind of fizzled out a little bit at that time. I think I would put these covers on Facebook, though. That's what I did like all through like high school. I would do Facebook videos and YouTube videos. But yeah, I remember I checked that CD Baby account one time because I forgot about it. Because I had this like connected, and I don't think that like the label or anybody like ever knew. Like they knew about it, but like they didn't know where like the money was going. And I think I checked my CD Baby account thinking like there could be like some serious change in here. And there was like 37 cents. It was something ridiculous.
Literal change.
Literal change. So, yeah. Go out and check that out. I'm still Shea Mooney Music on YouTube. Go check that out. You're going to love it.
Your name, James Shea, is it Moon? How do you spell your last name? Your real M-O-O-N-E?
Yeah, M-O-O-N-E-Y.
It is M-E-N-E-Y?
N-E-Y. Yeah, Mooney.
Mooney. All right.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
And if you're getting this with a pseudonym.
I don't think so.
All right. Listen, let me do a little plug here for you guys. Not that you need it because you're killing the world. The arena tour kicks off March 6th in Nashville with the band Camino and Ingrid Andress, who's a great friend and so good.
Amazing.
So good. All the way through October 31st. And you guys are everywhere. It's hard to get tickets. It's just really great to see. It's good to
see
people that work really hard crush it, because it gives hope to other people who work really hard.
Likewise, man. It's really fun also just to say it is very fun. I think the coolest thing about this town is the people that you do meet. And when you get to see them also, you know, crushing it and having these moments is fun because you're killing it. It doesn't feel like real life for either one of us. This is wild.
And I think a bit too, we haven't stopped to take it in as real
life
sometimes.
Yeah.
And I think for you, it's great that you have a kid and a wife, because I think there's probably some balance there that you didn't have before.
When I'm home for like 2 weeks, I forget what I do for a living, literally, which is probably not a good thing. But it is just kind of, those are two different worlds. So it's cool to slow down and kind of remember how blessed we are to get to do this, especially with people we love.
Well, dude, I love you. I'm glad you're here, and I'm rooting for you guys. I get nervous for you guys. That's how you know I really care, because I'm like,
absolutely.
Oh, man, I hope this does so good.
Yeah.
I hope the arena tour sells. I hope so.
But one of these days, we have to go and we have to play. I don't think they've ever done a concert in like Bud Walton Arena. So we'll just go. We'll go do that together.
We'll go. I'll do stand up and open
Perfect.
The show.
Let's go.
And then you guys will play.
I would love it. They're working, by the way, this can be our opener. I'm working on getting a massive amphitheater in Fort Smith, Arkansas.
Oh, are you really?
Like from my hometown. Yeah.
Are you in?
Like, yeah.
Look at you now.
And I want you to be in on it.
Yeah.
I have an opportunity to just talk about it.
Let me. Yeah.
We'll just talk about it. It's off air. I have literally 500 million now.
Yeah.
I just found that out, which is pretty exciting.
So we'll end with that question. 500, it says net worth online, 500K. It has to be higher, right?
Not after this deal.
Okay. All right. It's going all into the amphitheater. All right. Episode 221, Shea Mooney. Follow him on Instagram at Shea Mooney. Follow at Dan and Shay, and go see them if they're coming around. They really are even better than you think they will be, which is an amazing thing to say about someone who you already think they're going to be great. So, and I mean that with all my heart, not even
thank
just saying
you,
it. So, all right, thank you.
Thank you.
This festival and concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop before attending your next concert. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort. with little to no break-in period. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink, shop new styles. If you can't make it to a store, just visit tecovas.com. T-E-C-O-V-A-S.com. You can probably spell it. You probably know it. Tecovas.com. Find your new favorite pair of boots today. This is the year to stop overpaying for your family plan. So choose a Straight Talk wireless family plan. Unlimited data, talk, and text on a reliable 5G network. And you can get a new line starting at $25 per line per month for 4 lines, plus taxes and fees and no contracts. That's good decision making. Available at Walmart and on straighttalk.com. Family plan discount with 4 lines, all on the Silver Unlimited plan. Not combinable with auto pay discount. In times of traffic, your data may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Video streams at up to 480p.
Are you still searching for your perfect place to call home? Well, now is the time to buy at Fisher Homes. If you're looking to move in before the end of 2024, May could be your last opportunity to start building your dream home and close before the year's end. If you're hoping to move in even sooner, Fisher Homes also has homes that are move-in ready and waiting for you, where you can start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with a new home advisor today at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home.